Hello?
Good morning.
Hello? No.
Good morning.
Morning. Is this Nicholas?
Hello?
Hi, Greg.
Hi. Did you
Nicholas.
get Lynn phone to work? I'm having it worked yesterday, but not today.
Seem to be working for me here now. I called from home the previous time, not at work. Yeah. Might be. But I have a good idea.
All right. It's 5 past, so we should probably get started if people have connections that seem to be working, probably via good old telephones rather than clever voice over IP. So who do we have here? Let's see, there is some new folks, notably Benjamin. So we should probably just do a quick round of introductions so people recognize each other's voices. Are other people hearing choppy sound? Greg, do you hear me okay, or?
I hear you okay, but I've heard other choppy sound
Yeah.
previously. Yeah. I think we probably need to consider another audio option for next time.
Yeah, agreed. And so let's see what connections we have. So there is, let's see, so Benjamin said that he is the 864. Then, so let's see, so, who is from area code 310?
Is that me?
Oh. Hello, David. Good morning.
I should probably know my own phone number, but I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I should have written the phone number as well for that, given that one less than mine. Is that any of the connections? Let's see. Note someone from area code 415.
That's me.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Doesn't seem to
want to
hear me.
Rob Sanderson, I'm from the J. Paul Getty Justice, and co-chair of the community group, along with Greg Kellogg. So we will just go through in order of actions from that. So David, if you want to go, well, sorry, Rick and I'm given that there's two Davids now. And who comes next?
Hi, I'm David Newbury. I'm the Enterprise Software Architect at the J. Paul Getty Trust.
Thank you. Next one.
I'm sorry? Did you say? Can you hear me?
Yes. That time, yes.
On and off. I'm Niklas Lindström from the National Laboratory.
Thank you. Greg?
Greg Kellogg, Tech Ops. I'm a co-chair of the CG along with Rob and primary editor of the specs.
Benjamin?
Hi, I'm Benjamin Young with John Wiley & Sons. I'm going to hopefully help Rob co-chair the upcoming JSON-LD. Working group at the W3C. I've been using and promoting JSON-LD for years, but missed out on being part of the community group until now. So, hi all.
And David.
Hi, I'm David Lay, and I'm with Digital Bazaar.
Good. Thank you, everyone. And so, of course, we have the traditional age-old question which comes up first. Of scribe selection. Is there anyone who is willing to be the scribe this morning? Benjamin will scribe. Thank you very much, Benjamin. okay, some announcements first and then an update on the working group charter and process, and then hopefully we'll be able to dive into some of the issues reasonably quickly. As hopefully you all saw on the mailing list, we have, thanks to Greg, updated playgrounds, and the main playgrounds now supports more features of 1.0, and there's a development playground for 1.1, which is awesome. We can now try out all of the things that we've been talking about and make sure that they do actually fulfill our use cases and requirements. Greg, do you want to say anything further with the playgrounds?
Yeah, well, thanks to Dave Lane for making that happen. I think there is an issue as to whether we really want to keep sort of a legacy 1.0 playground as the primary and then have a separate development playground or just have a single playground to avoid confusion. Also, excuse me, regarding compatibility, the development playground is working for all of the specs other than the updated framing. I'm working on framing bits right now.
Cool. So for the question of one or two or more playgrounds, what do people think? Should we stick with just one? Because if you don't have at version 1.1 in the context, it'll process it using 1.0. So if you don't know about 1.1, you'll never know the difference. Whereas if you do, then having one playground to go to makes it much easier.
One thing we can do is add a visual switch of some sort to, say, process things in 1.0 or 1.1. So just have one playground, but have a mode for it, so when people want to test their 1.0 markup, they could actually do that.
Yep, that'd be good. That was it. No, it sounded like David.
Oh.
That was me, David Lane, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, that was... But Nicholas has gone on the queue.
Right. Yeah, I was thinking probably the same thing. Not necessarily another playground, but... from my point of view, that should be really clear that the 1.1 is being blocked. If you have the same playground,
Nicholas, you're breaking up quite a bit, so if you have something profound to say, maybe
like
better that. Type it in.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes, that's the perennial problem. Hopefully we'll sort something out for next time. Great.
Yeah, so I'll point out that 1.1 is almost entirely compatible with 1.0, and unless you specifically use 1.1 features, you're really getting the same thing. The minor differences where you're not are in compacting IRIs. There's a difference in prefix term selection, which I think is really just fixing a bug. And also the 1.1 spec, even in 1.0 mode, does sanity checking on context, term definition, keywords, as well as container values, which the 1.0 spec did not. So I don't really think there's much practical value in having a switch between an old processor and a new processor, but maybe there's some value if someone's worrying that something should be working differently, they can easily check a 1.0 implementation. But otherwise, from a perspective of the way you would expect a processor to operate, they should be the same.
Yeah. Given the processing, so this I ran into with issue 581, given the processing mode can swap somewhat dynamically, how would the switch work? Would it simply force 1.1, or would it use the 1.1 algorithm? And given the changes that Greg just described.
Is Lane, are you still on the line?
Yeah.
Yeah, could you elaborate on what your thoughts were with regards to a switch?
Well, honestly, I hadn't thought about it too much other than just it could pass flags in to do whatever needs to be done. The reason why there's two playgrounds right now, by the way, is just because it was the easiest thing to do in a quick manner. So,
So there is, in my mind, there's two ways that a flag might work. One is some switch on the in the HTML, which would invoke one version of the processor versus another. With regards to running in a 1.0 processor, there are two ways to turn on the 1.0 mode. One is through the version announcement in the context, and the other is via an API option. So that would perhaps be another way to do that. The tests typically take advantage of the API option, so we're not having to type at version every place. And I, you know, that would be a useful thing to be able to do for people that really know what they're doing. There's other flags that perhaps, other API flags perhaps that we might want to enable through the UI as well.
Yeah, I do agree that there's lots of that. I mean, that's just something someone has to work out on how best to actually add that to the interface without making a mess of things and making it easy for newcomers to come in and just jump in, as opposed to, you know, we don't want to make it too complicated.
So sounds like everyone is happy with having one playground, and we're looking for ways to make the version and switch the most user friendly. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Sure.
Do we want to put an action or a proposal out there?
Okay. I will do a quick proposal. There we go. Seems like everyone, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Default processing mode. Yes, a good point, Nicholas, that we should discuss. Given that you need the app version to switch it on, or using the API with a toggle, as Greg described, I think the default version has to be 1.0 because you need to turn on 1.1.
Well, I think there's an ambiguity in here. There is, and the way that the proposal was written, it's not clear whether it's intended to use a 1.0 implementation and a 1.1 implementation, or a 1.1 implementation with a specific mode to turn on 1.1 processing, or to, so basically there's two ways that that could be interpreted. And what I saw from Nicholas was suggesting that we stick with the default as being a 1.0 implementation until 1.1 is reached recommendation, or perhaps someplace along the line there. At that point, the working group would have to decide.
Yep. right. Yes. So then a friendly amendment to the proposal would be have one playground that uses an implementation of 1.0 and an implementation of 1.1. Yeah. And is that what everyone else would think as well, or?
Yeah, why don't we stick with that for the time being? We can always revisit.
Yeah. Benjamin, you brought up sort of evangelizing 1.1 as a rationale for having 1.1 processor as the default.
Yeah, but if there's any risk of change in that, we may not want to start with that. So, like, because there's 1.1 or 1.0 in the world predominantly, and that's what needs sort of encouragement and help, then I think the 1.0 default makes sense. But the interface can say, you know, learn about 1.1. It's easy to turn on by doing the following thing. Because we don't want to confuse newcomers with the new stuff and then have the ground change underneath their feet. So we do want to promote them to use 1.1, but not too quickly, if that makes sense.
I think that's what we're saying, right? The proposal in the chat, that is. The playground handles 1.0 using a 1.0 implementation rather than the 1.0 algorithm in 1.0 mode, and that 1.0 will be the default with the way to turn 1.1 off.
Just an implementation detail of this is saying we want to have two versions of JSON-LD running.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, I will have to make sure that that's easily doable because namespace collisions and things like that. So.
Well, that's what you're doing right now, effectively, right? We're getting to the development version by loading another web page, but you know. You could hide that in some HTML, right? That would make it appear to be a toggle on a page.
Maybe. I mean, we can work out all these details later. It just, it may make sense to try and load both libraries at the same time and just make sure that they, and then just choose which one you call. I guess. I don't know. There may be some details here to work out, but. I mean, the idea is fine. Yeah. It's just we have to see if we can do it.
Mm-hmm. But,
okay,
yeah,
great.
I mean, working code trumps chat on a conference call. So whatever works is, of course, better than something that doesn't work. I propose, given the time, and I think we're pretty good to go, pretty much done with this topic, that we'll move on to update on the working group charter, unless there's anything else that's burning for the playgrounds.
I do want to make sure we have some time to look at open poll requests for the call today.
Yes. Okay. Update on the charter. Benjamin, our scribe today, has volunteered to be co-chair of the working group, should it be approved, with the approval of Ivan, who will be our star contact, myself, Manu, and Greg. However, there hasn't really been much of an opportunity for people to sort of step forwards. But does anyone, if anyone has a concern, please email me and we can discuss it. Send us in at edu or ezra42@gmail.com. No need to describe those email addresses. Thanks, Benjamin. So, yeah, assuming everything goes according to plan, then we have our two chairs, which is important for sort of backup and making sure that we have at least one on every single call, and just sharing the administrative workload. We have our contacts, we have editors. So in terms of the, it was announced to the advisory board, no one seemed to flinch or even bat an eyelid. So far everything seems to be going well. We need to put in a little bit more work on the charter in terms of writing out what exactly we're doing and by when and by whom. It looks very promising for a working group in the not too distant future. Benjamin or Greg, anything further on that one?
No, other than to note that one of the updates to the charter points to a wiki page. I'll paste it here. That describes a little bit more in prose the changes that the community group has gone through the last couple of years.
All right. Greg, there was some issue that wasn't on the agenda that you wanted to add?
There are pull requests that are sort of need to be dealt with in order to sort of help move forward in doing other things, including address the other open issues that you highlighted in the agenda.
Given that getting stuff up to date is better than discussing things, we should probably do the pull requests first. Greg, do you want to take the lead in sort of picking one and describing the change?
Okay, there is a longstanding pull request on authorship for 1.0. We didn't come to an agreement on how to deal with that. This pull request basically updates it so that ISHO is being the editor, I believe, of the 1.1 work with the previous editors as authors, as well as additional authors based upon their contributions. And Marcus, I believe the concern was Marcus was concerned about losing credit for the work that he had done. So it was something that the working group ultimately needs to decide on, or the community group ultimately needs to decide upon. The other ones are basically pulling through open pull requests.
Yep. So for 487, the author's one, does anyone see an issue with merging? Otherwise, should we do it? Plus ones in the channel, please, just so we have the record. As you can see, it's pretty straightforward. And yeah, it really only is effective up until we have a proposed recommendation coming from a working group, where the working group will have to at least revisit, if not change the decision. So. Right, so plus zeros from David and Benjamin, plus ones from everyone else. I think we're good to go. No one? David, Lane.
I'm happy to just defer to the comments that are in that pull request, and I don't know. I don't have any stake in the matter, so whatever other people agree on is fine. As long as everyone's okay with the decision.
We don't have a huge population, but no one seems to be against it. And people on the issue, well, the one question from Marcus was addressed. All right. Greg made it, so I guess I'll merge it. Oh, okay. Which one next, Greg?
Okay, next one is PR 573. This should be pretty straightforward. There's been some questions, and I don't think this actually resolves the issue, but there are questions on the use of relative IRIs in JSON-LD and some confusion out there. So this pull request updates it to say that the term relative IRI applies only to those IRIs which are, in fact, resolved relative to the document, and it does not describe IRIs that are relative to the vocabulary, since the algorithm that's used there is slightly different. I do think, and that issue remains open for us to reconsider our use of document relative URIs in vocabulary positions such as types and properties. Actually, I believe type can be interpreted as document relative, but properties do not. And that's been confusing for some people, particularly coming from the RDF field. But the text here just clarifies the intention of what the documents say today. And I believe they've been broadly accepted by the people that raised the issues.
So, just for for example, if you had a term that
here,
was...
I'll take an example. If you had something like that in Turtle, that might be used in a property location, right? And that would basically resolve foo relative to the document. You can't do that if you have some JSON-LD where you have, say, something like this, unless you've established a vocabulary that foo is going to be it'll be either relative to the vocabulary, it will be ignored as not being something that could be resolved. So we might want to consider some cases in which a term or a property begins with a URI delimiter that it can be considered to be relative to the document rather than a vocabulary, and or consider a way to define that the vocabulary base is the same as the document base. For instance, at vocab is at base. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. That would be the, those would be issues remaining to be resolved and are not, in fact, resolved by this PR. But I don't think that should prevent us from pulling this PR and then using that updated text as a basis for reconsidering these.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So the, and hence, to be clear, the PR simply updates the text to do what the current implementations and expectations, the implementations do and expectations are. And if we want to change that, then we can, but the PR is a clarifying one, not a functionality changing one. Yes?
Yeah.
Nicholas.
Yeah, I'll try to speak first. Can you hear me?
Yep, so far.
Right, yeah. I sadly haven't been trying to do it properly. I'm reading it, but I just wondered if the phrase vocabulary relative and resolve relative to the vocabulary mapping is correct, given that it's a string concatenation and not a resolution.
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember why we chose string concatenation for dealing with vocab versus traditional IRI resolution, and maybe your memory is better on that one. That's something we also might want to reconsider.
It's because vocabulary can end in hash, and we don't want vocabulary. The right resolution is that we have to type the hash in every key.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's the same mechanics that is done for key names in Google Purple and key names in the
But I suggest we take that back to the issue that was relative to issue 488, and that we further consider future changes to issue 488. Let's pull this one in. It's just at least to get the text in line with current behavior.
Any other questions or comments? Nicholas, yep, we need the clarification of recognition. And I think everyone else and David. And PC David had to run, so that is everyone. Thanks. Two honors. Right, we have 20 minutes left, so loads of time. What one next? Greg?
All right, see, PR 574, it's complicated. It really is just an editorial change, except technically it's not. There is a place in the document where We say to pass a document relative flag to the compact IRI, which doesn't in fact have a document relative flag associated with it, only vocabulary relative. So this simply moves it. Actually, I think it is entirely editorial. I don't think it requires a vote. I would suggest general acclamation on moving forward with that. Same with 575, which updates the compaction algorithm with some punctuation to try to make it scan easier for people. It does not change anything technically about it.
And this is going to be quite short, so if you want to give a quick look. Otherwise, you should merge them. So, any objections to merging 574, the removing the relative flag, which doesn't actually exist? Going once, going twice. All right, done. And similarly, any objections to merging 575, which is the making it easier to read? And if you do object, you would need a good explanation as to why something should be harder to read. Going once. Going twice. Finished.
Great. Okay. 578 is actually updates some of the examples because it includes code to extract the examples into separate files and perform validation across them. So they've been updated to be valid JSON after they've been processed. My intention is to increase that so that validation would actually go on to verify that what the example says it does, it actually does with regards to the Ruby implementation in any case. Doesn't quite get there yet. As a side effect of extracting all of the examples, we can perhaps make them available to the playground more easily so that all the examples in the spec could be evaluated in the playground through a drop-down list or something. We've also made claims about the ability to use other syntaxes such as YAML instead of JSON. This would actually allow us to automatically create YAML versions of the JSON.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's simply infrastructure changes to make things better. Some fixes to syntax for issues, which of course is good. Yeah, no actual content changed. So I don't think we need a proposal. Any objections to merging?
I just have a question of why are we doing it like this? why are we merging things like this? I mean, we can discuss the things on GitHub and come to a conclusion. I don't know who's going to... The only people who would object are people who have already read the PRs, and I don't know. This is
so
kind
of
weird.
We just need to establish a process by which changes that we make changes, and rather than acting unilaterally, I think in many cases there's calls for reviews. I think if all the reviews that were called for were accepted, then that would be straightforward. But if they're not, then I think it's reasonable to ask on the call if the CG is good with doing that. We just need a process to
merge. I mean, honestly, there aren't that many people that are here to, I mean, it's just a few of us that are agreeing to this or not, and I, for many of these, don't have an opinion one way or the other, so I don't even know how to, I don't even know whether I should object or approve or anything, so, I don't know, this just seems a little strange, that's all.
Yeah, it works much more smoothly for issues rather than for changes to the website. Yeah, for text changes, it is important because the editor and having been an editor, I've been impressed personally, and you can lightly misunderstand the resolution, or you can write it in a way that's slightly ambiguous. So having another set of eyes on things is always useful. For the website, things like this, yeah, trying to get through them quickly is important, so hence not waiting for POS ones and so on. But just having the community in general staying up to date, and if we'd had more people, then that would be more community, more people on the call, that is. So, yeah, sort of getting through these sorts of things on the call, I think, is useful. Not absolutely essential, but useful. And yeah, it just, I guess, as Greg sort of said, it reinforces good practice and process. It becomes more important that we do it religiously for the normative changes. Does that help, David? I do understand.
I mean, I get it. I just don't know. Okay, I'm fine with this, but we can always change things if anything goes wrong, so it's not that big a deal.
Yeah, I think, you know, it also sort of goes back to the role of the editor, and the role of the editor is to act on the decisions made by a working group or a community group in this case, and if there's controversy, the editor should seek to get it resolved. I don't think in any of these things there's any controversy, but nonetheless, I think it's useful to have something that we can record that allows us to go ahead and do that. And of course, as you say, we can always change things if issues are brought up in the future.
Benjamin?
One of the things I agree with David about is the, like, doing this on the call is helpful to get them closed and pushed forward, and that certainly has value. But if you missed one of these or didn't give them any review earlier, and then it comes up on a call and you just kind of plus one it to get it out of the way, or you don't really have time to review it, then I don't know that it's really solving for what we want. One hybrid solution might be to create milestones for the calls that are just dated as like telcon whatever and the date on it, and stick the issues into that milestone and then promote that milestone before the call as like these are things that we're going to discuss and essentially push through. So if you're plus one or minus one on them, this is your deadline to do something about them. Otherwise, it's intended to be the same forcing function as what we have here, but to drive people out of their silence, because I imagine that silence is not always consent in some of these. These issues today have all been pretty trivial, I think. But we should vote on things, certainly, that are editorial and encourage participation. So maybe there's a way to overlap this better so the people who ignore the calls that pay attention to GitHub still see that their input is needed, whether or not they do it on GitHub or on the call, may become less important if they know that they have to speak up by this deadline.
Yeah, I like the idea of using milestones based on calls. That seems like a really good crossover between the GitHub infrastructure and the sort of W3C telecom process.
It's a great facility, particularly for pending PRs We can also, of course, put issues in there that we want to discuss, but I don't know that that necessarily means we intend to resolve those issues on the call. So we just need to be clear about what it's meant to have something appear on a, sure. on a telecom milestone.
Yeah, sure. I agree with that. And because it's not, a lot of times, you know, I expect issues will take several calls to get discussed and whatever. So it's more a discussion point. And maybe the intent should be stated on each issue, but like due to activity on this GitHub issue or the nature of the thing, like this is a minor situation, we intend to close it at this milestone or something. I don't know. But I think it's the best tool we have in the drawer right now.
Quick process proposal, which I think captures what we were just saying and everyone seemed happy with. And while we're doing that, no one objects to 578. Right, I can merge it. Come once, come twice. Stop. Do you need to be copying them into the chat? No.
Okay, the last PR is 582, and this, there has been a long-standing issue on actually merging the separate framing document into the API, as the reason it was separated was the framing was not ready for 1.0, but has since become much more mature, and ultimately I think having two documents for a working group to consider the syntax and the API simplifies things. It also technically allows the API spec text to hang together a little bit since everything that's being referred to is in the same document. But it doesn't change any none of the substance of what was in the framing document was changed when it was moved into the API document.
And it's the Travis build reports failures.
Yes. So it reports failures at this point, that's because it does there's continuous integration applied, and that was from the previous PR for the example testing. I've since turned off the automatic testing on Travis because it doesn't really make sense until the validate examples is merged together. But if we do all of these in proper sequence with appropriate merge edits along the way, the result should be that PRs all pass on Travis, and that will also allow us to find other, at least intact errors, if not semantic errors quite yet, in future PRs.
Nicholas?
Yes. Concerned about making the API document larger, I think that to some extent I've been thinking that the API could be separate. And the reason for me being a bit concerned is that framing is there are many ways to do framing, and also there are many ways to do some kind of flattening. There are shapes to do framing the algorithm cannot always produce, which are new. It's easier to test when something is a smaller document, and also it's easier to write alternative specifications for special use cases. Perhaps that's that the API document itself does represent the only official to doing that, and
Nicholas, I'm afraid that at least Benjamin and I can't make out pretty much anything. It's really, really muffled and poppy. If it's possible to type it, and you can certainly we will certainly come back to it. And while you're typing, David.
Yeah, I was just wondering. I'm not sure if I'm going to be repeating what was just not too well heard there, but the merging the framing in, is that going to be a problem for other implementers? I mean, I know most of us are here right now, but are there other people who would don't want to have to include framing in their implementation? I mean, I don't know if it's important for some other people, and if they want to say they're compliant, they would now have to implement the framing. Algorithms. Is that an issue for anyone? Does anyone even know?
I'm trying to think if there are any implementations out there that do not support framing. And I don't think I'm aware of any, other than Google's probably.
Well, yeah, that's one of the things I was wondering, if there's the search engines or whatever that have their own implementations, and now they're, I mean, maybe just that's not even an issue for them. They just won't do it, and it doesn't really matter, but I was bringing that up.
I think
wondering if it was an issue.
It might be useful to describe different levels of conformance. And I think, for instance, many people perhaps are content to implement the expansion and two RDF functions of the manifest of the spec. Without getting into compaction, flattening, framing, and whatnot, since that provides a substantial amount of interoperability for people that are trying to integrate with RDF tool sets. And we might consider framing as being a level beyond compaction, possibly beyond flattening as well.
Yeah, as Nicholas says, RDFlib, the Python implementation doesn't, one of the Python implementations, sorry, doesn't implement framing, so there's a second one.
Yeah,
I guess I shared concerns that framing is quite a separate beast from compaction expansion and flattening. With a, you know, you need the separate frame rather than just the context. I'm not minus one, but I'm certainly not sure that we need to have a single API document. Documents are relatively cheap in W3C sense. Yeah, we can
The issues were that I was encountering were more like web idle things, where you want to be able to refer to options, to have options described in one place versus two places. Mm-hmm. That actually required creating a separate option structure just for framing that didn't make sense. So that a lot of it was just due to the technical aspects of describing APIs. That overlap. I think a way to handle it might be through different layers of conformance in the spec that allows for processors to implement bits and pieces without and being able to claim compliance for certain processing levels.
Benjamin, and noting the same.
Yeah. Thank you. having done testing for web annotation and also sort of done some of this discussion about levels of interop, there were things that were much easier because our specs were in separate documents, and that putting lots of spec text together and then trying to do levels of interop and levels of testing, which is really where the rubber meets the road, was very discouraged by Vaughn and others because of the testing tools aren't set up for that, and the process isn't really set up for that. There are probably cases where it exists in spec work at the W3C, but and you guys have been here a lot longer than I have. But when I did testing for web annotation and when we discussed some sort of leveled approach, that was generally discouraged, and just straight up write your doc relative to your test and tests to the doc. So if you put a whole lot of stuff in there, that does raise the bar for implementers to pass those tests. Now, can you do minimal work and ship code and live a happy life? Yes. But if you want the gold star from the W3C for your implementation, then the bar goes up with every must that you add to a document.
Okay, well, fair enough. I think then we need a proposal to not merge this and to resolve the issue 477 as a will not do.
I am testing. Yeah, the testing issue, and please plus one, folks, or plus zero, that we ran into with web annotation stuff was, because we did think about the levels, is that it's not just a must, a should, or a may, it's suddenly a, you may support all of this, and if you do support any of this, then you must support this, this, and this. Right? So level, if you claim to support level two, then you must support feature 6, 7, and 8. But you don't have to support feature 6, 7, and 8 to support level one. And yeah, the testing tools simply have no concept of that. Agree?
We might want to update the, as Nicholas points out, we may want to update the charter to specifically call for a framing document as a separate product of the working group rather than right now, it just shows syntax and API. I'm not sure it would be restricted. In any case, since the work group can always decide to split the work up, but we might want to just update the charter accordingly.
Yeah. That's excellent. All right, and
okay.
A few minutes past. Thank you, everyone. And yeah, we have cleared almost the decks of PRs, so hopefully after the next call, Greg won't have done too much, and we can get to the issues to discuss. And yeah, hopefully also over the next couple of weeks, we'll try and find a alternative teleconference bridge that has fewer technical issues. And hopefully we'll be able to hear Nicholas's valuable inputs by voice rather than by text, and Ivan will be able to connect. So anyway, thank you, everyone. Have a good couple of weeks, and we'll talk again.
Okay, thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Yep. Bye now.
Bye, all.